Kof Hei Sivan, Friday the 12th of June, Rabbi Joseph Perlman, Lessons from the Meraglim.
Okay, good morning. The choice of this topic is obvious. It's the main part of the Sedra. But there's also another subsidiary point, and that is that when Rav Dudi asked me to give the talk, he knew that I was intending to go on Aliyah very, very shortly, and he said he would like a topic connected with going to Eretz Yisrael. And so, of course, what could be better than to go to Eretz Yisrael, but not in the way of the Meraglim? I've set out here a set of lessons which we can take from the episode in this week's Sedra. You see, I've got 7 different lessons to learn, and let's start from the very, very first one, which of course is clear from Rashi, that the parsha of Meraglim is set right next to the parsha of Miriam. And Rashi tells us that, he says in the very, very beginning, that the Meraglim should have learnt the lesson from Miriam, because Miriam had just been guilty of Lashon Hara. Now, Miriam's Lashon Hara is absolutely very, very difficult to fathom, because she was the older sister of Moshe Rabbeinu, she was the person who saved his life, she was the lady who, an older sister would give Musa to the younger brother. She had an amazing number of factors in her favour, and yet she is criticised. You cannot tell other people. She told Aaron, her own brother even, and she thought that her brother would be appropriate to be the person who could give the Musa to their youngest brother Moshe Rabbeinu, and yet nonetheless she obviously stepped over the mark. She shouldn't have said what she said, and we see the seriousness of even a slight deviation from the halachas of Lashon Hara, because she could have perhaps approached Moshe privately, and she did not, and therefore we see the seriousness of this aveira of Lashon Hara. The Meraglim were aware of this, they did not take the Musa, and they broke the rules of Lashon Hara. So the first thing that we see, the first message that we get from the beginning of the Sedra is always learn from other people's mistakes, make sure that you don't do anything which is inappropriate, and try to apply the lessons that are from other people to ourselves. For us, of course, it's a big musa that we should see how the gedolim behave, we should see how other people behave and not fall into the trap ourselves. It also includes learning the halachas, in particular the Chofetz Chaim and the rules, so we should be very familiar with the rules and not fall into this serious trap. The second lesson is, you have to have complete emunah in Hashem. Because the Pasuk says, Shlach Lecho, says Rashi, after the first Rashi which we've just done, which says, Lo Manismecho Pashas Meragli Befashas Miriam, etc., etc. The second one is, Shlach Lecho Ledatecho. I'm not telling you to do this, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You want to do it, you can do it off your own bat. But remember, it's very, very dangerous what you're doing. I've told you that the land is for you, it's good. Don't start querying my decisions. The message for us is that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranges a situation which we feel we want to check out, yes, you've got to do your own hishtadlus, but not to the extent that you're questioning what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has got in store for you. What's the right thing to do? You do what is right in the eyes of Hashem, and you don't question it, and you don't go and check it out first to see whether or not that is appropriate. That's the message of Shlach Lecho. They should have listened. The Akash Baruch said Eretz Yisrael is the right place, and not start worrying about whether or not that it is going to be suitable for their needs. Hashem has already said it's going to be suitable, and they should just have accepted that. So that's the second clear lesson from the parasha. The next lesson is interesting. It's connected with this lesson, and that is when the Meraglim went, with what perspective did they go? It's quite interesting that in the parasha the word Meragel is not mentioned. In this parasha they're called Torim. Now everybody knows what a tayar is nowadays. A tayar is a tourist. Torim and tourist is easy to remember. They went as tourists to inspect, to see whether or not it would be suitable for them. Exactly what they should not have been doing. Of course you've got to do your own hishtadlus, and that depends upon your madrega. Obviously, if you're a very, very high madrega, you do less hishtadlus. We know that some of the Amoraim in the Tanoim in the Gemara's time, it says, he wasn't bothered about anything because he knew Min HaShemayim things would work out for him. One day he came back, he didn't have candles for Shabbos. Can you imagine us not preparing candles for Shabbos? How could he possibly not have known that there was no candles for Shabbos? Yet, what happened? He came back, there was no candles for Shabbos. So what did he say? All right, we'll use vinegar. So they said, but vinegar is not oil, it's not going to work. He said, no, he was such a madrega, he could get away with it. We can't possibly get away with that madrega. You can't come home. I can't come home, you can't come home on Friday without oil for Shabbos, without candles for Shabbos. Somebody said, we'll put vinegar in the and it'll work. There's no way that's going to work for us because we're not that madrega. But if you are that madrega, the hishtadlus is very, very much reduced because you're on a much higher level. But the point is that everybody's got to do his own hishtadlus, and that's actually why Yeshua sent his meraglim. And if you look at the difference between Yeshua's meraglim and the Moshe's meraglim, although they're not called meraglim in this week's Seder, in Dvorim, there it's mentioned that when it's talking about what happened, Vayeraglu Oso, they actually did go as meraglim. And the reason why that word is chosen over there, because although they went as torim, meraglim has a pejorative connotation, one can put it that way, and therefore in Devarim, when the story is repeated, we call them meraglim. We don't call them the torim. Everybody knows the story of the meraglim. But meraglim has that connotation of something which shouldn't have been. It wasn't as good as it should have been, and in the center they're only called Torim, and Torim means people who are going to look at it. As we see at the end of the Seder, Lo Sasuru Acharei Levavchen. There's a connection between the beginning of the Seder, which talks about Torim, and the end of the Seder, which talks about Tzitzis, and tells us you become very, very careful not to be Sasuru Acharei Levavchen, which means that this idea of Torim is not quite as good as it should have been, because they went to see what was happening. Now, if you look into the parasha, you'll see I've written here exactly where in this parasha the word occurs. You see a number of times we've got this losasuru and losur and viyasuru. It's always that expression. Now, if you look in the Malbim and the Ksava Kabbalah, they point out that there are 8 basic differences between the meraglim of Moshe and in the Haftorah where the meraglim Yeshua sent. And these differences are actually crucial to the attitude of what went, of the people who went there. I have actually set them out, but we can do them very quickly. Moshe sent 12 meraglim, Yeshua sent 2. You don't need 12 meraglim. You need 2 people, competent people. They can hide themselves better. You don't send a whole group of people if you're going to make a meraglim. You send the the experts, two experts are quite sufficient. Once you've got 12, it becomes a whole chabura, and it becomes a public affair. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu had to send 12 because each tribe had to be represented. Second point, you don't normally send Nesiim Meraglim. Meraglim are usually people who hide themselves, who are not so prominent. Why was it Kol Nasi Bohem? Now, it's true that there are lots of pshatim in that pasuk, Kol Nasi Bohem. Those people who were here there in the shir yesterday and in Rav Monks will know we discussed why the Negina is Kol Nasi Bohem rather than Kol Nasi Bohem, because it should have been really, if a P-Tik-Tok, it should have been Kol Nasi Bohem. But in fact, the Poshuk says Kol Nasi Bohem. And there's a lot of different pshatim to try to explain why the Negina has been transferred from a Tipcha to the Mercha, and different explanations as exactly what this Nasi was all about. We can't go into that now, but you can, whatever it is, the Nasiim were involved in this particular situation, and when you send Meraglim, you don't put Nasiim, you put in the expert spies, and the person in charge is the general of the army, not necessarily the Nasiim. Second point. Thirdly, you don't go publicly if you're spying. You don't show yourself to everybody and go publicly. We can see that when the Meraglim of Yeshua went, when the people were coming to look for them, they had to hide. They had to actually hide. And who is the best possible spy? The best possible spy is a person who can make himself invisible. The invisible man is the best possible spy, because nobody could see him. And we know that when Yeshua sent two spies, he had one person who could make himself invisible, Pinchas. Pinchas was like the invisible man, and he could go along. He didn't have to hide himself because he was invisible. The Kollel had to hide himself in the loft there, and they had to cover him with whatever they used to cover him. What was it called?
Bundles of flax,
was it? Whatever it was, they covered him. But Pinchas didn't need, so the apostle says, Vatitzpano. It should have said Vatitzpanem. Why Vatitzpano? Because he only needed to hide one of them. But that's the type of spy that you need, a person who's capable of hiding himself. And yet these people went publicly, so that doesn't make sense. It makes sense if they weren't going to spy, they were just going to check it out. Because if you want to go on a holiday, where do you go? You go and you look at the brochures, you go there and have a look round to see whether there's a hotel, is there accommodation, what's the place like. Before you go there, you do that. You know, if you want to go to Bournemouth, you check, you go to Boscombe, are you going to go to Sandbanks, where is there a shul, where is the a restaurant, you check all these things out. But if you want to capture Bournemouth, that's the last thing you'd be interested in. All you're interested in is, where's the weak spot, where is the armament, how can you blow the place up? That's what spies do. So we see that there was a completely different intention here. Next, the fourth one, Shlach Lecho, we've already discussed that. I'm not asking you to go. You don't need to go for my sake. You're going for your sake. That we've discussed already. Five, what do you need to go to the whole of Eretz Canaan for? You're not capturing the whole lot at once. You go in at one part of it, the nearest part, you capture that, and then you go further. But here, they had to go on the length and breadth. Come in Gam. They went right on the length and the breadth of the whole of Eretz Yisrael. That was because they were just checking it out to see whether or not it's going to be suitable, which tribe would have which part. That means it wasn't a military point, it was a geographical, topographical investigation. Next one. That you don't need a representative of each tribe if you're going to try to blow the place up or try to capture the place. Why? Because you need the military people just to go and capture it. You don't need to have a representative from each tribe. It's got to be represented in the milchoma. The answer is that you want just the best military people, and they may come all from one tribe. I mean, maybe, for example, from God. God were the military tribe. Maybe they should have been the ones to do it, or to lead the campaign. But yet we see in the Pasuk, every tribe has to be represented. Why? Because each tribe is going to get a different part of Eretz Yisrael. And each tribe was going to have a look. What, this would be suitable for me. This would be suitable for me. Each one wanted to know where their suitability would be. Naphtali would have the Merem Mesada, they would have all the Galil, and this one, Yehuda, would want the Hori Yehuda and Yerushalayim, around Yerushalayim. They were all looking for what's suitable for their tribe. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, the Guru will give you that. You know, you don't have to check it out yourselves. So that's another factor. Next one. They were sent from Midbar Paran, which was miles away. Normally, when you're going to attack, you get close, and then you send your spies out from close by to make the next attack. We're not talking of the nuclear age, where they had bombs sent from halfway across the world. In those days, you had to go physically and to attack. So if you're going to do a physical attack, you've got to be close by. And Paran was miles away. They were not yet near Arvas Moav, where Yeshua sent them from nearby. When they were ready to go in, Yeshua sent them in from there. Next case, they also went to the whole of the land. Oh, we've mentioned that before. And the final one, they wanted to see whether the land was good or not. Clearly the Pasuk is telling us, you're not going for military purposes to see whether you can defeat it and what weaponry to bring and what the weak points of the land are. They were going just simply to see whether it was good, and that they should never have done because the Kodesh Baruch Hu told them it was already good. So we see from the two sets of Meraglim, we see exactly what was the difference between the Kavona of each. And that's why when we now take the message from the Meraglim, the message we take, if you're going to attack, or if you're going to do something, you've got to do your own ishtaglus. Can't expect it just to fall into your path. So therefore, you have to take the necessary military tactics. When, if chas v'sholem, Eretz Yisrael is under attack, yes, of course you've got to go to the besmejin, of course we've got to say tehillim, but you also not only tehillim, you need tilim as well, as they say in Hebrew. You need rockets, and you need protective measures. You've got to do that. What was that thing that they had, the operation? Iron Dome. Yeah, we've got to have Iron Domes. We've got to do our Hishtadlus as far as we can. And of course, we've got to go to the Beis Medrash and learn as well. And in fact, the yeshivas, they cancelled all the holiday leave, and people came and learned during the Ben Hazmanim, so that there should be extra protection. But you've got to have both. And you've got to do your own ishtadlus, but you've got to pray to Hashem. You cannot just do one or the other. And here, therefore, what the mistake of the Meraglim of Moshe was, that they weren't doing their hishtadlus; they were doing just looking for their own benefit. Mashenki and the Meraglim of Yeshua, they were sent because they had to do a job. And of course, I can assure you that Yeshua and Klal Yisrael were praying hard in order that they should be successful. That is a message that when you do anything, you've got to do it with your hishtadlus, with also the belief in Hashem. Let's move on. The kasha with the Meraglim is, the Meraglim didn't say Lashon Hara about anybody. What they did was, they just criticized Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara tells us in Erchin, Bo Uriyei kama godol koyach she Lashon Hara, Uma Meraglim shotzi Hashem ra al eitzim v'avonim, Dama kroma tziye dibas ha'oretz ro'o. We see from here, the Lashon Hara is not just on a person. It's even on sticks and stones to criticize land unnecessarily, or any benefit which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, even if it's not human, it's still not allowed. And we do a Kal V'Chomer, if already talking about the stones and the Eitzim V'Avonim of Eretz Yisrael, you got so severe punished, how much more so will you get punished if Chas V'Sholem you are going to criticize a human being, criticize the wrong word, if you're going to say Lashon Hara about another human being? That's the Gemara, it's very, very important. And in fact, We are very, very quick nowadays to make fun of Israelis in Israel. I know people laugh at it, they think it's a good joke, and they're talking about all sorts of things. You shouldn't do it. If it's a positive thing that you've got, that you want to do a business, and you're worried that maybe you're dealing with somebody who has not quite got the English methods of business, okay, that is a possibility that you can take that into account. Of course you've got to be careful when you deal with people, and people from different cultures have different attitudes. Nobody's saying that that's wrong. But what is wrong is to talk about it. We say in Shir HaMaalos, we say, Re'eh b'tuv Yerushalayim. Always look at the good side, and you don't have to always criticize unnecessarily. There can be an occasion where you do have to take somebody aside and point out that this is not the way to behave, or you should do it differently. And there are halachas of Lashon Hara. They're very, very clearly set out. But just stand to make fun and jokes about... You say you're making jokes not of the individual person, about the nation. In fact, it's mentioned that if you make a joke not about the person individually but about the kehila or about the nation, you've got many, many, many more times averus. If you make a fun about one person, you've got one avera, you made a fun of one person. But if you make a fun of the whole shul, you say, oh, that shul doesn't behave properly, or that shul is not something which, whatever is wrong about it, then you've got avera of every single person who's in that shul. You've done the avera, so you've got to be much more careful. That's what Re'eh b'tuv Yerushalayim, and it's a famous Gemara in Ksubos, which says that Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi, whenever Eretz Yisrael was boiling hot, they would go into a cold room, they would go into the place where Beni Amudi, they would go into the columns, out of the heat, and say, oh, how cool Eretz Yisrael is. And when it was freezing cold in Eretz Yisrael, which can happen, they would go from the cold place, and they didn't have a central heating in those days, and they didn't have... But they would go next to a warm fire and say, oh, how cozy everything is in Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rabbi Amir, they wouldn't go around criticizing, oh, the climate's no good here, and this is wrong here, and no, that, no. Eretz Yisrael, and Yerushalayim, Re'eh b'tuv Yerushalayim. But it's not only Yerushalayim, it's everywhere. Remember, Beis HaMedrash and Mikdash Me'at. Instead of criticizing and saying all the things which are bad about it, try and find something positive. I'm not saying you haven't got to try to put what's wrong right. Of course you've got to do that. If there's something which needs attention, and you need it. I mean, if the Gabbai is not behaving as he should, you've got to take certain action to either remove the Gabbai or improve his image, or do something that you've... There are halachas of Lashon Hara. And in fact, you're not allowed to sit back if there's something wrong. You've got to do something. But you've got to do it in such a way that it's not Lashon Haradik. And there's seven rules of Lashon Hara that you've got to keep in mind. And once you've done those seven rules, if you've done them, then the pasuk goes on to say, "Lo tamad adam reacho." Don't stand by while your brother thinks. But the same pasuk is not "Lo selich rochem b'amecho." The second part of the pasuk is "Lo tamad adam reacho." Do not stand back. So you've got to weigh it up as to when you can say what you've got to say, and this is where you have to learn carefully all the halachas of Lashon Hara. And unfortunately, we see that the Meraglim fell down on that, because they came back and they started saying, yes, it's very, very good, but they criticized this, that, and the other. And they didn't do Re'eh b'tuv Yerushalayim, so to speak. They were busy with critical things. They can't do it, the people are too strong, and they fell down on that particular message. Next, we see a famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, that the Meraglim... So they said, Hikdim Pei La'ayim, in Echo, which is coming up. I hope that we won't have to say Echo this year, but on the assumption that we will still have Tisha B'Av, we'll be saying Echo, and everybody knows that the Pei and the Ayin got mixed up on the second, third, and fourth chapter. In the first chapter, it's in the right order, but the second, third, and fourth chapter, the pay is before the ayin. The whole of the Aleph Beis is like a Seder, except the pay and the ayin. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Shehikdimu per le'ainayim. They started saying things which they haven't yet seen. And that is wrong. If you falsify something, or you say things without proper care and attention. It's a terrible avera, and the meraglim were punished because they hikdimu per la'ayin. That's the simple explanation, that they said things about Eretz Yisrael which they should not have said, even things which were not visible that they had said. There is a beautiful Hakel Me'amnos, he's different from the Gemara, the Noz Darshan. He says, pay is the pear, that's where you eat with, and I is the ayin, that's where you learn Torah with. And he's therefore the Hikdimu pay la'ayin. They put their Gashmias before their Ruchnias. They were all interested in how the land would be suitable for them to be there. They put their Gashmias first, rather than thinking, you know, where can we set up a good yeshiva? That would have been the right way of doing things. The Hikdimu pay la'ayin. And that is, we have got to realize that we've got to consider with our eye first, and the pair, the Gashmias, and be careful what we say, be careful what our tithes are, get it the right way round. That's the message of that. Now the question then arises, why is it that in Eicha we have the first chapter is Keseder? If it's telling us the same message in chapter 2, chapter 3, and chapter 4, and in chapter 3, of course, there's three times, and the Agever is three times out of this, so we're getting five times the Aleph Beis Keseder, and once it's not Keseder. Why should that be? Now, I've written down here five answers to that question. We haven't got time to go through them, but you can look at them, you can see it. Very, very briefly, one answer is that the first chapter has to be Keseder, otherwise you would have thought that Yirmiyahu had a different Aleph Beis from us. And then you wouldn't get the message. If his Aleph Beis was paid before Ayin, who says Ayin's got to be before pay? Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet, maybe he had a different Aleph Beis, Aleph Gimel Dalet Beis. How do we know what his Aleph Beis was? So it had to put once, the first time, I've got the same Aleph Beis as you, now I'm going to give you the message in the rest. That's a beautiful answer from the Amar Shor, and it's also a very similar sort of answer in the Torah Tumim that's mentioned here, and there are other answers too. But I would like to mention the answer, when I was a little boy, I heard this answer from my grandfather's Zichrono Livracha, and I found it afterwards in the Sifsa Chachomim. And remember, in those days, they didn't have quite the same availability of Sforim. I think it was his own Chiddush, but I found it in the Sifse Chachom, and afterwards also in the Iyun Yaakov, very similar on the Ein Yaakov. He said like this, we know as a rule that kol sheker she'ein lo emes betchiloso ein lo miskayim. If you have, in Rashi says in this week, Sedra, that unless you say an honest bit at the beginning, nobody's going to believe a word you're going to say. You've got to say something, Emma. What happened? The Meraglim said that it was a beautiful land and everything was wonderful and the fruit was fantastic. Oh, but then we can't conquer it because they're too bad. Powerful people. People are dying all the time. And they looked at the bad side of things. The people were dying, especially because the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted them to be busy with their kfuras, and that you could go, oh, no, we didn't think of that. That was that they didn't attribute to Hashem. They just attributed to bad things. So, therefore, they had to say something good at the beginning. So therefore, says my grandfather, Zichron Livrocha, this is the message of the first chapter has to be correct. And after that, you can say, the Lashon Hara comes. But in fact, if you think about it, it's exactly how a con man works. A con man works, it gets your confidence, he makes you think that he's a good chap, look what a good deal he did in the first place, and then afterwards you fall into the trap. Anybody? Well, I don't know. I hope you don't know. But if the gambling people, they always let you win on the first bet. Why? Oh, look how fantastic! I made money for nothing from a bet. I'm going to gamble everything away, and that's how gambling starts. And then you lose everything because you've got to get the person in the first place. You've got to be very, very careful in that respect, not to fall into that trap. Not to fall, oh, this looks wonderful from the outside. The first time it looks wonderful that whatever is being offered to you. Be very careful. If the first thing looks attractive, be very careful that in fact you're not falling into something. That's a lesson for life, and it's a lesson in all that we do. Be very careful that you're not just attracted in by something which is ephemeral, and then afterwards you end up having trouble. So that's the final lesson. We've got a couple of minutes left. Just do the final lesson. That is the lesson of Yoshua and Kolev. I've written down here the places where Kolev is mentioned before Yoshua, and the places where Yoshua is mentioned before Kolev. and some places Yeshua is mentioned, some places kind of in connection with the miraculous. Now that's puzzling. Everyone knows that Yeshua was the leader after Moshe. Kadosh Baruch Hu prayed, "Call Yoshiachu mitzvah me'atzis miraculous." All sorts of pshatim. But Kadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe that there's something special about Yeshua. He's going to be the next leader, and therefore he's got the Shem's name attached to him. He was the leader of Klal Yisrael. So one would have expected him always to be mentioned first, and yet that's not so. We find on occasion that Kalev is mentioned before Yeshua. Now, I once got into trouble many years ago from the gentleman was learning in Koilel, in the Hargis Koilel, Rabbi Yonason Royd it was, now he's a Rav. And at that stage, what I said was, well, the difference between the two is Yeshua was a Rav and Koilel was a Balabos. Boy, did I get it. But what do you mean Koilel was a Balabos? He had wives like Miriam was his wife. And another medrash says that he was married to Bisya Basparo. I mean, he was a tremendous godel. How can you say he was a balabos? I didn't mean he was a balabos like nowadays. I'm talking, he's not a Heitiger balabos. I meant he was a balabos in the Meraglim's time, in the Moshe Rabbeinu's time. Then a balabos was a Boki Bashas. I know they didn't have a shas yet, but he was. They had Mishnayos. They definitely had Mishnayos in those days. They learned. Obviously, they didn't have Ayis to Abai Verov, and they didn't have the Rabbi Akiva, etc. But the Balabos, what I meant, and I think he accepted my explanation of what I'd said, was that he was actually a person who's in this world. Yeshua was a leader for the way, a Godel Hador. A Godel Hador, you go to Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, you go to the great Gedolim when you want an Eitzah. You go to a Rebbe if you're a Chosid. If you're not a Chosid, you go to a Rav. You go to get a Psak together. But if you want to go and do a business transaction, yes, you go for a bracha for them, but you've got to go to an expert. You need to go to somebody who's an expert in the field, in business, and that may not necessarily be the same person, but you need to go to somebody who's honest, decent, and knows the halachas. In business, there can be all sorts of shyness, which you don't even think about if you don't go about it that way. And the difference is this, that Yeshua was the Rav, Yeshua knew the psak, he knew how to run Klal Yisrael, but Kalev, he was the alabos, so to speak, in the sense that he knew how to handle the people. He knew how to deal with he was a spy, and he knew how to do that. And the Rai is Yeshua chose Kalev and Pinchas to go and do the second set of Meraglim. So therefore, when the Pasuk says it, they're both equal. Everybody must serve Hashem in their own way. A Godel Hador serves Hashem by learning Shas and doing what he has to do. But we, Balabatim, we also have to keep the Torah. But we've got to serve Hashem in our way. And sometimes our way can be superior. Very often, if a Rav were to tell somebody what to do, they won't listen. Ah, he's a Rav, what's he know about business? But if a businessman, were to talk to another businessman, say, look, don't do it that way, it's not good, it's not al pi alocha, and you can lose by it, the person will listen much more. Vayahas Kalev. Kalev was able to keep everybody else quiet, nobody else could do it. Why? Because the Kalev knew how to deal with the psychology of the other people. And that's why sometimes Yeshua is mentioned first, and sometimes Kalev is mentioned first, and the Medrash, there's the famous Gemara which says Shovin Haim. Sometimes it says Moshe is mentioned first, sometimes Aaron is mentioned first. And the Gemara mentions about the Torah and the Ben Yonah. Sometimes one is mentioned first, sometimes the other, to tell us that Shovin Haim. And the same thing with Yeshua and Caliph, Shovin Haim. Well, they weren't Shovin. Yeshua was greater. Ah, he might have been greater in Torah, but there was Shovin Haim. As far as the avoid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was concerned, we're all equal. Each one's got his task to do. Let's finish there and hope that we'll go from here and learn the lessons of the Meraglim, and each one will do his tafkid in life.